The following is a solo episode on my first impressions on the text-to-image generation AI system called DALL-E 2, a few ideas from my most recent mini essays, and a question from the audience. What do you use for blogging? Hey, it's Nono, and this is the Getting Simple podcast. Before we get started, I would like to let you know that I'm preparing an incoming conversation on the podcast with architect, writer, and sketcher Frank Harmon. He's released a book called Native Places, Drawing as a Way to See, in 2018, and it contains 64 mini essays and sketches from his blog of the same name. So Native Places, he's been publishing or pairing sketches and stories for many, many years now, and he wanted to pack those into a book. So I'm going to ask him why he writes, why he sketches, and the benefits of both, and what he thinks writing and sketching are tools for. I don't want to spoil anything, so we'll see that or hear that or watch that in a future episode on the podcast. Today, we're going to talk about DALL-E 2 really briefly because I want to make a dedicated episode about that. We're going to take a look at a few ideas on my sketch.nono.map blog, and we're going to answer a question that was submitted to the podcast, which is, what do I use for blogging? Without further ado, let's get started. Let's talk about DALL-E 2. I recently got access to the private beta of DALL-E 2, which is OpenAI's latest iteration of an AI system that can generate images from text. I've generated images in different styles and variations of my drawings, experimented with public pages, mask edits, uploads, and more. I did an overview and a live demo last week on the live stream. That's live stream 79. And I've shared a 10-minute video as well on my first impressions, which packs some of the content that I shared there and amplifies it a bit with some diagrams, which you can watch at nono.ma/DALL-E. That's nono.ma/DALL-E. Lowercase. DALL-E 1 was released in early 2021 and DALL-E 2 in 2022. The latter produces more realistic images, obviously, it's the second iteration. And we can kind of compare it to something called Imagen that was developed by Google, is their proposal that does something similar to DALL-E, and was recently released as a publication to showcase that they are kind of going at the same rhythm than OpenAI, but the code or even the usage of the model hasn't been open to the public due to concerns from Google about potentially harmful uses of the AI system, like pornography, harassment, and many other things. You can think also of deepfakes. Like, there have been many controversial things lately with like deepfake calls or deepfake images and things like this that are not super fun. I'm experimenting, writing, and thinking about the repercussions of these types of systems in our culture. And I have to say, I'm already benefiting from working with machine learning-based tools. Not DALL-E specifically, because I haven't really used that for anything work-related, but this podcast, this video, many of the things that I do are machine learning-based or helped or machine learning-aided. I'm unsure of what changes the future generations will undergo. I'm sure the transformation is going to be really deep when these systems are able to do virtually anything, right? Right now, we're just seeing it's kind of a toy that can generate images, but what does that mean? You know, are people going to lose their jobs? Are they going to change the way they worked? There was somebody, I think Danielle Escobar, I think, they were kind of joking on the chat, on the live stream, that there will be a new role that is going to be called the prompt engineer, because it seems like you're left behind text input on the website of DALL-E 2, and you have to come up with the best quote, or you have to reverse engineer what you have to feed the machine to get what you want. might be on the style of a painter or like describing features, but not trying to confuse the machine and many other things. I've also seen that, for example, in Google Party, that is another machine learning architecture, they comment on how it doesn't really understand negations. So for example, they have an image in which they say, I want a plate without bananas accompanied by a glass without orange juice. And the image generated is actually a plate with bananas and an orange juice next to it, right? So there are still problems that they need to figure out, but I think we can't imagine what this is going to do to society. The value, at least the value of people who make illustrations or people who make art and paint, everything is becoming faster and faster and easier. And the craft, the human craft, the things that we do by hand are going to be valued less and less. We've seen this already with many disciplines, manual craft or like making wood furniture by hand or metal things by hand. We don't see the need anymore, but I think that as more and more areas of our lives get covered by an AI or a machine learning or automated system, we're going to have a harder time finding purpose in our day-to-day, right? So that is something that is going to be really influential. I think that not only creating images from text prompts, but also machines will be able to persuade us to think differently and act differently and maybe say things differently or I don't know. It's going to be a big thing and I need to spend some more time thinking about this and researching, but that's just my first impressions on the repercussions of this. So far, I've tried, as I said, generating images on different styles and the possibilities to me seem endless. For example, you can say, I don't know, Sunflower by Edward Hopper, right? It's a painter that I like, and it tries to get you an image of a sunflower, but on the style of that painter. And you could say like by Picasso or like by Monet. That's just an example, but you could also say a 3D rendering of a glass with wine, something like that. And by adding these stylistic modifiers, let's say, to the sentence, it generates an image that is completely different, right? You can type a sentence and obtain 6 images. Right now in the private beta, you have a limitation of 50 generations, as they call them, per 24 hours. That's, they say, to allow everyone to be able to use the tool without overloading the servers. But you can also upload an image and ask for variations. It works really well with photographers. The other day we were at a restaurant close by the beach, eating a salad with many ingredients, right? So before we order, we try to generate images from scratch, saying a salad with pasta and yogurt, lamb's lettuce, dried tomatoes, and avocado. And it generated images that look exactly like what we were going to get. I added the word minimal or minimalism, and then it generated like a really clean center perspective with like a white background and a white plate, everything perfectly proportioned. The reality was that what we got was over a messy like wood table. So later we took an image or took a photo of that and asked Dali on my phone to generate variations. And it generated images that if looked quickly on WhatsApp or like if you just send that image and don't pay too much attention, you cannot tell the difference, right? It works really well with photographers, as I mentioned, but I've also seen surprisingly good results by uploading my own drawings and sketches. A concrete example was that of a sketch of a backpack, which you can see in the summary video I mentioned before at nonadomas/Dali. Dali not only understands its backpack, but it realizes it's a half-open bag, it has items inside, it has straps to hold it, and it draws other bags with the same color tones and configuration, different drawing styles, but it understands the context and proposes images drawn in a similar style. Not my sketching style, but really similar. And as I mentioned before, I want to work on an episode talking a bit more about these things, dedicated to Dali, to text to image generation systems, but also an episode around AI and creativity and how it's going to affect culture. I may record a Bytes episode on this with Aziz Barbar. If you're interested in these technology topics, we have the Bytes series, so you can get to that at gettingsimple.com/Bytes. That's B-Y-T-E-S. And a last note, you might have heard of the keyword GPT-2 and GPT-3. These are language models trained by OpenAI, and they are able to generate text, they are able to encode text into embeddings and understand the contents of a given sentence. And Google also has some of these models. They actually, on the imaging website, they show 4 or 5 different steps that they were training a model with different parameters, I think from, 100 million or to 20 billion or something like that. And you can see that prompting the model with the same sentence by increasing the number of parameters of the model, the results are drastically better, right? So GPT-3 is a model that is able to generate a lot of different things, not only text. And there is also Copilot. So this is a product from GitHub that is a subscription-based tool that allows you to autocomplete pieces of programming code. So if you're coding, it might autofill a set of functions or a set of code that you would write there. So this is for the first section. That was DALL-E. I hope that you are also enjoying these advancements in technology. It's really exciting because we've gone from living without internet and without computers to living with intelligent machines. And now, we've transitioned between like the developments of tools like Adobe Photoshop, where we were the ones automatically doing many tasks really quickly on the computer, to now having tools that do that for us. And this has been a period of like 20 to 30 years that as a consumer, we've been able to do that. And we're soon to see that for many tasks that we created tools for and that we learn how to do on the computer, we're not going to even need a program because an automated system will do it for us. All right, so that is for the first topic. Now we're going to talk about a few of the mini essays that I wrote on the Sketches blog. You can read all of them at sketch.nono.ma. The first one is titled The Meaning of Done, and it's a really short one. It says like this: Done means you get to forget about it, to contemplate the outcome and share it, to put a piece aside and move to the next one, to revisit your craft as part of its audience. There's something really cool about the process of creating something. You have the idea, then you go and want to make it, then you dedicate some time and make it. And there is some time when you say, all right, this is done. And that last part, it's our choice. So we can choose when something is done in many different stages, right? Some people are perfectionists and they might wait until it's super, super perfect, or they think it's super, super perfect. My take on this is that it shouldn't be super, super perfect. It should be just good enough so you can publish it, so you can put it aside, move to the next one, and let it sit. And then you come back as part of its audience, as the essay says, and you'll be able to judge it better in the future, learn from your mistakes, or maybe see that you've acquired a different taste or a different skill, and now you would know how to make it better. That's my take on it. All right, the second one is titled, If It's Not Fun, You Shouldn't Do It. The day I wrote this, I typed more than 1,000 words. And I wrote that essay and was sitting at my desk once again without nothing to publish. I wanted to go to bed, it was late, and I heard Frank, this is Frank Harmon, that I mentioned before, that we'll have on the podcast, in my mind on a recent conversation. If it's not fun, you shouldn't do it. He said this to me, and I was pondering. That moment didn't seem super fun, yet there I was, squeezing myself and enjoying a late writing session. Some days I'm prolific, others I drown in a glass of water. And just a clarification here, to drown in a glass of water is a Spanish idiom that we use when somebody or someone is overwhelmed by a situation that is not as dire as they think, right? They're more overwhelmed than they should objectively. But I always capture ideas and doodles, memories, facts, and details that grab my attention that I want to remember and may write about in the future. And this is talking about those 1,000 words that I wrote that day, but I didn't end up publishing on the post that was supposed to be the goal of why I was writing that day. And I find that the process is a joy. I was capturing more ideas that I could use later, and flipping through the pages of my sketchbooks and journals is priceless. And this talks about me capturing things. Some days I feel more like drawing or writing. Some days I feel less. Some days I just barely do it. So just make something, like draw something quick and type a few words. And some other days I might write 2,000 words and I enjoy it and I don't have the pressure maybe to even publish anything. So passing on to the next one, it's called Another One of Those. And it relates back to the one I just read. It's a late Monday evening and I find myself in another one of those days without anything ready for my Tuesday post. Ray Dalio uses the another one of those expression in Principles, Life and Work to signal recurrent decision-making scenarios and points out the benefits of defining rules to decide with the same criteria every time. I have to publish something, I thought back then. After all, that's what I've agreed upon with myself. What did I do? I shut down my computer and I left it after work and came back to the keyboard a few hours later. I wanted to clean or wipe my mind and just disconnect. So I wrote a few paragraphs and this idea that I'm reading right now came to mind. I wanted to finish early to have time for other things before I went to bed. The alternative, right, to doing these things last minute, which I managed to do every now and then, is to work on a piece of text or a piece of writing and schedule it for next Tuesday in advance. That way I can enjoy the peace of shipping early. So as you can see, many of my posts orbit around process. I'm aware of it and I like sharing how I conceptualize my creative activities, my workflows, yet I'm also reserving time for deep writing about other topics. Recently, I posted something to ask the readership what they would like to read next among a set of maybe 15 titles. While these mini essays of 200 words or less can take anywhere from minutes to hours, longer essays usually require multiple writing sessions and more dedication, and more so when I'm doing other things like having a full-time job and doing a live stream. So I look forward to sharing more essays similar to this one, continue reflecting, and probably in the future, pack them in URLs so you can see, as I did today, mini essays that are related to one another. I have series that talk about attention or friction, technology, process, and many other things. Okay, and now for the latest section of this episode, I'm going to answer the following question. What do you use for blogging? And this was sent to me by Johnny Pobox. And this is often asked to me by colleagues or friends or people who want to get started and create a new blog from scratch. They want to start publishing, or maybe they want to migrate from another platform that they don't particularly enjoy, maybe because it's really similar to that of other people or because they just want to move on. I personally use something called Folio. This is a content management system, a CMS that I coded myself in a framework called Laravel, which is a PHP framework. I deployed this to DigitalOcean, which means that I host it there. It has the content management system inside of Laravel, and it has a MySQL database, which is where posts are stored. And you have a menu where you can log in, you can browse through existing posts, you can upload images, you can see your subscribers, and you can click on new or edit existing posts. It also has functionality for generating RSS feeds or calendars, so you can plug the contents with different tags that you create to your calendar or maybe to MailChimp to create a newsletter campaign, which I do. And I also have support for podcasting. So in the Getting Simple podcast, I also use the same platform, and you can create a podcast feed, and I actually release episodes that way on iTunes, Spotify, etc., etc. I open source this system. So this is at github.com/nonoesp/laravel-folio. and, you know, I'll put a link on the show notes. That said, I think this platform is a bit idiosyncratic. It's a system I've created for myself. It's a bit more for developers. And I, of course, create really customized templates that adhere to the aesthetics required by each site. For example, at nono.ma, I have a really different template than at gettingsimple.com. And I've also tried Substack for blogging. I haven't embraced it too much. And the one thing that Folio supports that most platforms nowadays support as well is Markdown. Markdown is a syntax that allows you to type blog posts that can be rendered throughout content management systems and doesn't require for you to understand HTML or any web programming. And just to mention, there are different platforms for non-developers that you can use. I was mentioning Substack, which is a recent platform that appeared a few years ago and is getting a lot of traction because of the way that they make it easy for you to charge your readers if they want to pay, or also offer like free posts for people who are subscribed for free. So that is Substack. We also have Medium, which has a similar model. I don't know if they let you pay or like charge your subscribers. And there is also something called Twitter Writers that was called Review before. And there is some other that I'm not remembering at the moment in that kind of tier. But there's also Medium, Ghost, and WordPress. Ghost and WordPress are open source content management systems as well. They're not only platforms, but they also offer a platform. So you can create a blog there and host it and pay them to host your website. But you can also get the open source code and host it yourself in DigitalOcean or in other platforms. Then for developers, there is a wider option. So of course you could try Folio, but I would say it's easier to start with something like Hugo or Jekyll, which allows to release essays really, really quickly. And Next.js and React or other frameworks if you want to get more deeply involved in developing. So if you're a newbie, let's say, if you're not going to do any coding, if you just want like a nice looking website that you can manage easily, I would personally say go for Ghost if you want to have like a custom blog. If you just want to write and have a newsletter and publish, I would say go for Substack. That's the one I'm thinking on trying a bit more to see how a formal newsletter works or how could I write for a wider audience without having to use MailChimp to send newsletters. So this was today's episode. Remember that you can submit any questions at gettingsimple.com/ask and we can answer them here on the podcast. I have a ton of videos on the live stream if you're interested in machine learning. So you could go to youtube.com/nonomartinezalonso and you can also watch this and any previous episodes of the podcast on YouTube or at gettingsimple.com. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next time.